From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Zoe Gruskin with a quick news update. The legislature's top budget analyst says it's unrealistic for lawmakers to vet and make decisions on Governor Michael Dunleavy's budget proposal during the regular session, given the scope of proposed changes and limited documentation supporting those changes. Legislative Finance Division Director David Teal told a Senate committee Tuesday there remains a, quote, fairly weak understanding of the budget's impact and whether the budget will stand up to scrutiny. He says lawmakers lack justification from the administration for proposed cuts and have other legislation related to the budget to review. The scheduled 90-day session is nearly half over, though the Constitution permits 121-day regular sessions with an option to extend another 10 days. The budget, released February 13, contains sweeping cuts, and some legislators say it would shift costs to local governments. Governor Dunleavy's proposed budget presents Alaskans with a tough question, whether they want to slash spending on education, healthcare, and other programs to pay for larger permanent fund dividends. How people answer that question depends a lot on how they make their living and their views about the size of government. Nat Herz with Alaska's Energy Desk drove out to the Mat-Su to hear from Alaskans on both sides of the budget debate.
Fields on either side of the road outside of the Mat-Su town of Palmer are still covered in snow. It's a freezing cold morning, and it's kind of hard to imagine anything growing here. But when Amy Pettit steps out of the car, she sees prime glacial soil that by September will be filled with Alaska-grown produce.
It'll be beautifully straight, impeccably straight rows of different colors of cabbages and broccoli, cauliflower, and there will likely be a tractor in it every single day doing some harvesting or weeding, cultivating, etc. around all those beautiful vegetables.
Pettit runs an organization based in Palmer that conserves farmland. And while agriculture is a tiny industry in Alaska, its supporters are adamant about its benefits, which is why Pettit is worried right now. Governor Mike Dunleavy, in his budget released earlier this month, is proposing to eliminate an array of government programs that support the industry. No more state marketing of Alaska-grown vegetables and meat, no more state-sponsored loans for buying land or livestock, or for financing yearly purchases of seed and fertilizer. As we drive past one of the state's only commercial dairy farms, Pettit says the budget would be catastrophic for the industry.
Farming is a difficult enough endeavor as it is. Farming in Alaska is like tenfold that. And then you wipe out these support programs that the Division of Agriculture provides. And I just, man, it would be a lot easier, a lot cheaper to go produce food somewhere else.
It's not just the farmers who would be affected. Dunleavy's budget, as proposed, would eliminate more than 20 state agricultural jobs from Palmer, most of them full-time. That's just one way the plan would affect the town of 7,000. Teachers are also likely to lose jobs if Dunleavy's proposed schools cuts are enacted, as would healthcare workers. But there is a silver lining here, a $1.9 billion silver lining, to be specific. That's how much money Dunleavy is proposing to inject back into the state's economy through a larger PFD. And a big chunk of that money would go to people in the Mat-Su.
Oh, yeah, it's big for us.
That's Joe Hand. He owns a small used car dealership near Wasilla called Harvest Motors. The harvest is a biblical reference. Hand voted for Dunleavy and supports the direction the governor is moving, though he says it might be better if the changes were phased in over time rather than in one fell swoop. Hand says there's a real difference between a $1,000 PFD, like in 2016 and 2017, and one that's double that, or even triple, which is what this year's could be. He puts it in the context of a family of four.
If it comes out at $3,000, like what we're hearing, $12,000 is huge, especially for used cars.
The cost of that larger dividend, at least in the context of Dunleavy's budget proposal, is sharp reductions in government services. But Hand isn't sure whether Alaska is spending its money as efficiently as it could be. And when it comes to the state's agricultural programs, he says he appreciates the history and culture that's grown up around farming in the Mat-Su. But, Han says, it's not like his car dealership gets the same type of support from the state.
Well, nobody helps me. I had one car when I started and I have 50. So my opinion on that is that at some point in time, we as a community have to say, you know, the money needs to go to the greatest need.
One big question looming over this debate is about the broader economy. whether the larger PFD boosts businesses like Hands enough to make up for the lost state jobs and programs that would come from the smaller budget. The answer depends in part on how you measure those effects. A study by the University of Alaska Anchorage's Institute for Social and Economic Research says boosting the PFD produces more income than more spending on state government. But you get more jobs by raising government spending than by raising dividends. And that study is just for the short term. There's relatively little scholarly work that can help make long-term economic projections. Plus, economic data can only guide politicians so far, says Musin Ghatabi, one of the study's authors.
Is that the only dimension that people should be considering in making these decisions? Probably not. I mean, it's a question of values. It's a question about what they think matters most and what their constituents value. And I'm not qualified to speak to any of those things.
It's the state legislature working with Dunleavy that will determine whose values win out. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
Today's big news from Congress is the testimony of former Trump lawyer Michael Cohen. It's overshadowing a question that the Senate still must face, whether to reverse President Trump's declaration of an emergency to build a wall on the southern border. The House voted yesterday to cancel the emergency. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports that the Alaska delegation is split on the question.
Only 13 House Republicans voted for the resolution to cancel the emergency, and Alaska Congressman Don Young was not among them. He says he favors more border security and thinks Trump has the right to make the declaration. In the Senate, the vote is expected to be close when it comes up sometime before mid-March. Senator Lisa Murkowski says she will probably vote to overturn the emergency. She says she's concerned about expanding presidential powers. Senator Dan Sullivan hasn't said how he'll vote, but he grew animated when the subject came up at a hearing this week. A top Air Force general testified that there's no military threat at the border, and another senator called it a fake emergency. Sullivan, though, pointed to drug trafficking.
Okay, so if that's not an emergency, 72,000 dead Americans killed by opioids and heroin in 1 year, I have no freaking idea what an emergency is, so.
Government statistics show most of the heroin and fentanyl seized along the border comes through legal ports of entry. Trump plans to use the emergency declaration to divert $3.6 billion from military construction projects and spend the money instead on a border wall. All three Alaskans in Congress say they are concerned that home state projects could be defunded. The list of appropriations that are vulnerable includes more than $1 billion that Congress intended to send to Eielson Air Force Base, Clear Air Force Station, and other Alaska locations. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
And there's still no plan to remove the abandoned tugboat sitting in the Gastineau Channel. But the city is sending a crew out this week to remove water from the boat so it stays afloat. The Lumberman, a World War II-era tugboat, has been anchored on state tidelands between downtown Juneau and Twin Lakes since May. That's when it broke free from anchor lines outside Aurora Harbor and ended up the channel. Since the boat is sitting on state land, the city maintains that it's the property of the Department of Natural Resources to remove it. Deputy Harbor Master Matt Cresswell says the city recently sent a letter to the state attorney general's office asking them to take action against the vessel's owner. He says they're trying to keep the ball rolling on removal efforts.
We don't have a solid plan in place yet for whatever it may be, how it's going to be taken care of, who's going to pay for it, who's going to spearhead the effort.
In the meantime, they've contracted with Global Diving and Salvage to remove water that accumulated on the vessel during the winter.
We know that the hull's fine and the boat isn't actively taking on water from the hull, but there has been rainwater and snow melt and everything else. So we just want to make sure that the boat isn't filling up with rainwater.
Last year, the legislature passed a bill meant to improve the process for dealing with abandoned vessels. It was signed into law last fall. That's the latest from the KTOO Newsroom.